Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start in Dallas. If I'm Jerry Jones, I'd want to fire somebody today. I'm not joking. Cowboys were embarrassing yesterday. The Green Bay Packers came into Jerry World for a huge game and wrecked Jerry's world, stomping the Cowboys 34-24 in a game that was never close. That's 2 weeks in a row the Cowboys have looked nothing like a Super Bowl contender. That's 2 weeks in a row the Cowboys have lost to teams missing key offensive personnel. The Saints beat Dallas without quarterback Drew Brees. The Packers beat Dallas without the services of receiver Devontae Adams. Dallas's 3-0 start looks fraudulent. I'd want to fire somebody. Now, I didn't say I would fire someone. I said I'd want to. Problem is, I don't know who I want to fire the most. There are three candidates: the general manager who built this team, the head coach who is leading this team, and the quarterback who is orchestrating this offense. Jerry can fire Jerry, Jason Garrett, or Dak Prescott. I'd fire Jason Garrett. Here's why. 2 weeks in a row, the Cowboys were unable to meet the emotional energy of the opposition. The Cowboys were lifeless yesterday. Troy Aikman called this out in the first half.
The Cowboys sideline is, really a bit lifeless. And this crowd that came here today expecting to have really one heck of a ball game and a great celebration, they've been left just kind of sitting on their hands.
Dallas isn't tough. That's a reflection of the head coach. Rather than throwing a red challenge flag at the feet of a referee and yelling at him, Jason Garrett needed to get in the face of his defensive players and challenge them to tackle Green Bay running back Aaron Jones. Dallas's defense turned Jones into Zeke Elliott. Jones rushed for 107 yards and four touchdowns. He caught seven passes for 75 yards. The Cowboys are soft, and that's on their Ivy League intellectual lame duck head coach. I blame Garrett for yesterday's performance more than Dak or Jerry Jones, the team's general manager. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst LeVar Arrington and Hall of Fame tight end Tony Gonzalez. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
With my soft butt, huh?
What the hell? He from Compton. All right, what's the problem in Dallas? Jerry Jones, Jason Garrett, or Dak?
Wow, it's certainly not Dak.
No,
it's not Dak at all. Dak has been enhanced in the game plan, and that's because of belief in Dak and by performances by Dak. So it's not Dak. This team has gotten behind, especially the last 2 weeks early, and that's hurt their game plan in terms of balance. It has to be the coaching staff. It has to be Jason Garrett, and he's in charge of the emotions. I give you that. He's in charge of getting his guys engaged in battle. And let's just be real. This is also on Kellen Moore. This is also on the offensive coordinator who, for whatever reason, has lost that balanced approach in terms of how they come out the gate. But there's somebody else named who should be on that topic bar we haven't mentioned yet, Ezekiel Elliott. The last 2 weeks, Ezekiel Elliott has not combined for 100 yards, let alone had 100 yards in each game. So if you're Dak and you're promoted in the game plan, that is supposed to come with Ezekiel Elliott. Like, you don't abandon him to say, I'm going to enhance you, Dak, in the game plan. So Zeke needs to burden a lot of this responsibility because he's not been the same performer the last 2 weeks.
I'm going with the owner. It's ownership. It's going to be ownership Monday, obviously, stuff going on in the nation's capital. But the reality of it is the leadership rolls downhill. That rolls down the proverbial hill. And when you look at what Jason Garrett has accomplished in 9 years being there, three playoff appearances, no other coach that has come through those doors since the Super Bowl runs, and then Switzer being the last one. You got Chan Gailey, Campo, Parcells, Wade Phillips. None of those guys made it to 5 years as a head coach of this team. And what's even more alarming when you look at it, they've made the playoffs just three times under Garrett, and you have guys.
So you blame ownership for
it. It has to be based upon ownership because the coaching staff is failing. The coaching staff is they're not living up to the expectation of what it is that needs to happen. But the reality of it is that the ownership has to make that change and make the decision to go in a different direction. Seems to be that they've done it in the past. It's interesting to see why they've made it to 9 years with Garrett.
Well, you know, looking at it, I kind of agree with you there. I mean, the coaching, because look at this game plan, what was so successful for them at those first three games, and they're beating up on teams that they should have beat, is they were running the football. And right now, for whatever reason, Zeke was getting off yesterday. I mean, some of those 9-10 yard gashes, why don't you just keep giving it a ball? I don't care what the score is, because when Dak doesn't have that attack, that running attack, he's not the same player. Exactly. That's all there is to it.
Yep.
At this point in his career, I don't know if he'll ever be that good. But showing him to come from behind, he can't do that. He put up those big yards, but the picks were there, which is something he doesn't do. You got to get a game plan now. Actually, this is a good thing because they've lost to two playoff teams. Probably the Saints are probably the best team in the NFL right now. And Green Bay certainly looks like a Super Bowl-type team or at least a playoff-caliber team. But they should learn from this. You have to run the football for Dak to be that guy going forward. So I'm happy that this happened to him.
All right, so if we're blaming Jason Garrett, and it sounds like we all are, even you, LeVar, even though you're saying they should move on from the coach, and that's on ownership, so we all believe the talent is there, that they should have played better based on they're at home. We believe Jerry Jones has put together a high-quality team. No one questions that. That maybe they're not as good as the hype.
Well, look, they had issues at offensive line. You go out there without Tyron Smith, and then you lose another offensive line. Big loss.
Big loss.
You know, you're losing two-fifths of your offensive line just going through the game plan. And then if you look at it, the way that they're approaching it with Zeke, like you said, Zeke this week showed flashes. New Orleans, he didn't show flashes, so I could see why they abandoned it, even though it was still a close game. They lose by two on the road. This week, it just wasn't the same juice. Troy Aikman was seeing it on the sidelines, but you saw it on the field as well. They didn't have that balance. So without that balance, it exposes Dak, who gets yards, who gets exposed with a lot of garbage time yards. Two of those interceptions I won't put fully on Dak. One was a tip. The other one seemed like a deflection as well. One of them was his fault. But that's all in the promotion of him in the game plan. But you can't promote me, coach, quarterback, and don't promote my balancing act and my running game, the engine that is supposed to run this, which is Ezekiel Elliott.
But hold on, though. Again, we're putting a lot of blame on the offense. But that defense was terrible yesterday and got brutalized by Green Bay. That didn't make sense. Dallas is supposed to have a hell of a defense.
Yeah, and Green Bay is supposed to have a hell of an offense, right? So the reality of it, they've started slow, right? So
Green Bay, down a wide receiver.
They have Aaron Rodgers. I
get it, but Green Bay is supposed to have a hell of a defense. Their offense had started this season slowly.
The reality of the National Football League is the race to information. And what you saw take place in this game was Green Bay's ability to adapt and to adjust with the information that they've been given thus far through the start of the season. So you're looking at a Dallas team. It's not a hoax. It's just a time to adjust and to adapt. What Tony said, you know, what Marcellus is saying. If it's going to be the run, you got to commit to the run. If it's going to be run, pass, if you're going to commit to the pass, you had better find passing routes that are going to work for the success of your team. So the reality of it is, I don't think it's a hoax, but you're looking at a Green Bay team that has made the adjustments, and they made the adjustments coming in properly for the Dallas Cowboys.
You know, 99% of the league's offenses, to me, are okay, we do this well, so let's keep doing this well. Let's keep doing it. We got to lean on that in time when times get tough. The 1%, the really, really good teams, you look at the New England Patriots, they do whatever is dictated by the defense that week. I don't think Dallas is good enough. Dak is not good enough. He's not Tom Brady. So he can't come in and say, okay, well, this time we're just going to throw it 50 times, and next week we'll run it 50 times. They have a formula for success that works, and they're a good football team. Aaron Rodgers is that guy, though, I think. I think he's been able to be that guy where he can throw the ball 50 times or he can turn around yesterday and have this running back go off, and they leaned on that. So going forward, though, Dallas needs to figure it out because teams will figure you out. We're at that point now in the season where, just like you saw last night with Kansas City, they're starting to figure it out, okay? Let's double-team Travis Kelce. Kelce. Yep. And so people will, as they keep going out the season, they're going to have to keep adjusting if they can. Most teams can't do that, though.
Tony, it sounds like to me, though, then you're putting a lot more blame on Dak. He's just not really a franchise quarterback and limits what you can do offensively.
Well,
let's see what he says to this.
Yes, I mean, lead no witness.
Objection!
And I will say this, I have no problem, but maybe I am saying that then, because Dak, but Dak's at that point, maybe he can get better. It was his fourth year, but at this point, they have to run the ball in order for him to have success. That's just who he is at this point. He's not a bad quarterback. He's still a franchise quarterback.
Well, here's what I'll say in – I don't know, this is a bit of a defense of Dak. Is we keep talking about Zeke and lean on the running game. Hey, man, they have a bunch of money and a bunch of young talent on the defensive side of the ball. There's other ways to help a quarterback create field position, turnovers, three and outs, and use your punting game to play the field. None of that was going on either. When I look over at the New Orleans Saints, and this is, again, why I blame Jason Garrett and feel like he should damn near be fired, is I look at the Saints, and they lose Drew Brees, and they say, you know, Sean Payton leans into his defense. And it's like Teddy Bridgewater played great yesterday, but it's the Saints' defense that's like makes you go, oh, my God, this defense is incredible. And Dallas is supposed to have that kind of defense, particularly playing at home in a big game.
Well, they do have that defense. Sixth rank in points, sixth rank in yards. They do have that defense. They lost the time of possession battle in part because Dallas wasn't running the football. They only had the ball for 23 minutes. We saw it in the Kansas City game. They only had the ball for 22 minutes. That's a recipe for disaster for any team to go out there and put that much pressure on your defense. The same defense that a week ago went on the road and lost to a Teddy Bridgewater New Orleans team, which is damn good, and only gave up 12 points. So this defense is balling. This week, they lose. This week, the time of possession battle was out of balance. This week also, you have to remember that Jerry's World is not a home field advantage for the Cowboys. Their win percentage at home is 554. It's like one more game at home you've won than you lost. Like, they get at home, the other teams get as juice looking at that big jumbotron as the Cowboys do. So you add all that up, I don't want to overreact on the defense. What I do want to react to is that there's not a balancing act when they're going out there and playing offensive football if they're going to put that much stress on Dak.
All right, let's move to this then. Did the Packers, how impressed were you with the Green Bay Packers? Are they a Super Bowl threat in the NFC?
I don't think they're a threat. I don't think they have confidence in the way that they're winning. Right now, the four wins that they have, they haven't had 300 yards plus in those four outings. But the one outing that Aaron Rodgers went out there and said, I'm Aaron Rodgers, 422 yards passing, they lost that game. So think about it. This is not a recipe for success because, yeah, you can hand it to Aaron Jones, but I don't think that's their DNA. I don't think that's their identity. I think right now you swap jersey names and say that, oh, my God, that Dak is now doing what Aaron Rodgers is doing, 230 yards and wins. We will be beating up Dak once again. He's a game manager. He's relying on the defense, and he's relying on the running game. That's what Aaron Rodgers is doing right now. So is that the formula for success to a Super Bowl title? I don't think so for the Packers.
I disagree. I think that you have to evolve. And I think we've made it very clear you have to be able to adapt and to adjust. And where they are, where it stands currently right now, if your defense is playing as well as that defense, those Smith, I call them the Smith brothers. They coming off Preston and
Zadarius.
There you go. Darius. All right, I didn't want to mess it up. Yep. So the reality of it is those boys are getting after it off of the edges. They're being leaders. The defense is carrying this team. There's no doubt about that. We talked about how Aaron Rodgers may be uncomfortable with that scenario situation, but the reality of it is that is how they are winning games. And you get Aaron Jones involved in the offensive attack the way that they did, you're taking the pressure off of Aaron Rodgers to have to always, not some of the times, just always having to be Aaron Rodgers. So by creating that, you do turn into that. I mean, that's historically the recipe that you have to use to win the Super Bowl.
I'd be scared of this team right now. I think And I've seen it up close and personal. They came in wild cards, played us at home in the playoffs when I was in Atlanta. And if Aaron Rodgers gets on a roll, he was 32 of 36 that day, and he can start striking it, and how he does when he gets in that zone, it's impossible to stop, especially if you have a good defense. You got the offensive side. They got a good tight end, Jimmy Graham. They got a running back. If he keeps that up, how do you stop this? Marquez Valdez Scantlin, you got Devontae Adams coming back. Geronimo,
you got Mercedes Lewis behind.
They got weapons. They got weapons, and now they got that defense, the Smiths and all that stuff. I think for sure, this is a team you got to be scared of going.
You're not scared of them. I'm going to tell you why you're not scared of them.
Because hold on, you scared, Marcellus. They got Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, but Aaron Rodgers is not being Aaron Rodgers in this offense. Right now, he is being trapped in this offense, and he has to have this equation of, if I go for mine, we're not going to go for ours. So now you're suppressing yourself trying to fit into this offense. Will that go 16-plus games into a Super Bowl contention? In a win, the most yards Aaron Rodgers has had is 238.
That sounds like a good problem.
It sounds amazing, right? Until you saw Aaron Rodgers growing frustration already this season saying, is this going to work? Come on, offense. Now, that was after a four-game cycle. What's going to happen when we get to week 15, 16? And if they don't have success?
I think that's overstated if they're winning. Aaron Rodgers is enough of a professional and a veteran to understand that if you need to win this way, I mean, we've seen Tom Brady do that. Tom Brady has had to win with his defense being able to carry it and the run game be able to carry it. As this season progresses, so has Aaron Rodgers historically. So I think it's overstated to say.
Well, they're different personalities, and those are Aaron Rodgers' words. I'm not saying what I feel about it.
But I'll say I think what Aaron Rodgers is smart enough to realize, like, I don't have Devontae Adams.
Right.
The rest of these guys are marginal talents who I'm trying to play into bigger positions. I think he's perfectly good. I think he's ecstatic right now. 4-1.
Absolutely.
He hasn't had to carry the entire load. Again, to go into Dallas and put up 34 points, he's happy.
He completed four passes to wide receivers in a division where the worst record is 3-2. Ain't nobody sorry in that division right now for whatever you want to say. And if this is not your identity, but you're winning that way, sooner or later, you have to balance that out. What's their ID? I don't think this is their ID. Now, because of injury to Adams, we saw them lean on the running game. What happens when Adams comes back? Aaron wants to flex again, throws for 400-plus yards in a losing effort. Then, once you complete that sentence, I'll believe in this team.
Hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura CEO Dylan Miskowitz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/speak. That's ZipRecruiter.com/SPEAK. ZipRecruiter.com/speak. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Whitlock and Wiley joined once again by LeVar Arrington and Tony Gonzalez. Let's return to the NFL and a big story presented by Hyundai. The Redskins fired Jay Gruden today after a 33-7 loss to the Patriots, dropping Washington to 0-5. Gruden finished his Redskins tenure with a losing record and just one playoff appearance in his 6 seasons in Washington. Bill Callahan becomes the interim head coach. While much of the blame will be placed on Gruden, the Redskins have been a huge disappointment since Daniel Snyder bought the team in 1999. They have just 5 playoff appearances and 2 playoff wins. The once proud franchise hasn't won a Super Bowl since 1991. All right, the question here is, firing Jay Gruden a step in the right direction for the Redskins?
No, not until they fix the quarterback position will anything be a step in the right direction in Washington. Last time they had a quarterback, let's just talk about this year. Let's go backwards. They're on the third quarterback in 5 weeks. That's a problem anywhere. I don't care where you are. So let's not window dress this. And then the last time they had a quarterback they really believed in was Alex Smith, we know. Unfortunately, career probably ended on the field. And before that, another quarterback whose career probably ended on the field but kept and is still playing in RG3. You can't fix that position. You can't do anything else. And I'm just looking at the Washington organization upstairs not being able to identify that position consistently, and injuries happen, but also the coaching staff. You think about Gruden right now, Jay Gruden, my goodness, despite his lack of success, had Sean McVay on the coaching staff upstairs. If you see a Sean McVay there and you see Dre Gruden there, you might want to do a different calculation. Kyle Shanahan's out there doing well. Matt LaFleur out there doing well. So a lot of the coaching tree is blossoming in other places, but not as Washington Redskins head coach. So until they fix that critical position of head coach, but more importantly, quarterback, nothing's changed.
No one truly blossoms. I saw Joe Gibbs have a tad bit of success in his second stint there. But you can't take steps in the right direction if you don't take the steps from the root. The root of the issue is, you know, it's ownership. I mean, it's the culture of the building. It's the culture of how things are handled. I mean, when you're in a building where you're told not to look the owner in the eyes and acknowledge him if you're not of a certain level of stature.
Get out.
Is that real?
Come on now. Come on
when?
Now.
Now if or you're then? Not,
maybe things have changed. Oh, wow. But from my recollection, you had to address him as Mr. Snyder, even as an adult. And if you were not of a certain level or stature, you were not allowed, you were told not to look at the owner. Hmm. The reality of that example that I give you is until you treat people like people, and I've been saying this since I played there, I've been saying it since I did radio and covered the team on an everyday basis. I've been saying it for years. This is the young and the redskinless. That's what I call it. It's a soap opera that continues to have different episodes and season after season after season. And the reality of it is that it cannot change until the people have an ability and have the opportunity, the freedom to take ownership over the team, over what the outcome will be. When you played, You're either going to take a ownership over what your play is and what that represents for that team and what it represents for that city, or you're going to be in a position where you're like a mercenary, you're a hired hand until you go to the next team. I don't know very many teams that have won that had mercenary style players all on their team. You may have one or two here and there that can come in and make a team very good, but a whole entire team, I'm not sure. So I think until they change the culture, until that culture changes, there's no such thing as right step. I mean, it's just in place, stepping in place.
I love how you said it was like a drama going on there. We talked about it.
Yeah, right.
Because a reality television show. And first of all, no, I think you firing a coach this early in the season, especially with the way it seems like it's going down, this kid, Dwayne Haskins. Coach Dre Gruden doesn't want him. That's the rumor out there. He didn't want him from the beginning. Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen are saying, that's our guy. You're going to take him. Okay. Then you put Colt McCoy in, which I was like, okay, they're 0-4. Why would you put this guy in?
Right.
And then people are saying, actually, Gruden's doing this because he wants to get fired. So what is going on there? You talk about a drama. That's not if I was on that team, especially as an older guy, I'd be like, what the hell? I'm surprised nobody's asking for a trade out of there. It seems like the thing to do around the league right now. I would want out of there right now. But firing him, that's ridiculous. Stability is what wins. Just look around the league. The teams that have stability and coaches that have been there that go through the ups and downs. I know he's been there 6 years, but I just don't agree firing a guy in the middle of a season. There no good can come out of that as far as I'm concerned, especially with their quarterback situation.
Yeah, I think LeVar makes a great point about the culture established by the ownership where it's difficult for the players to take ownership of the team and therefore be accountable for the wins and losses. Because all the direction seems to be coming from well above Bruce Allen and Daniel Snyder. And if you look at the Dwayne Haskins decision, if the coaches weren't in on taking the quarterback and they were forced to take him, that's a problem. And if you remember right, I think it was Urban Meyer said this about Haskins that he still needed to mature. And so I think their football people were like, hey, man, if you go look at the tape of Haskins, there's some potential here, but it hasn't been fully developed at the collegiate level, let alone taking him in the first round of the NFL draft. And so I agree with you, LeVar, that it starts at the ownership level. Until that's fixed,
That's convenient to say, but I think there's a displacement between in the locker room when you have the right assets and they go on the field. And I have three cases in point. Alex Smith, when he was healthy, 6-3. Where's ownership? Is that a problem? Is that something?
Go a little further, though. Don't stop at six and three.
RG3, before he died on the field, he was 10 win in the playoffs before he died on the field. Horrible decision. I think that was coaching staff more so than ownership, putting him on the field when everyone could see he wasn't ready. Kirk Cousins and his 9-7 division win that year. Like, there have been enough anomalies to say that there's some consistency. You fix quarterback, you fix this situation.
No, Marcellus.
Got to be quick.
No, super quick. With RG3, you took Kirk Cousins in the same draft.
Yep.
You were already preparing for him not to work out. And it goes back to your point of not knowing what to do. Goes back to your point of not knowing what to do at the quarterback position to begin with. It's a much deeper situation.
Tony Gonzalez is back. Joining us now is Fox Sports NFL analyst Michael Vick. All right, let's go to Kansas City, where the Chiefs were held in check by the Colts defense as Indy escaped with a 19-13 win at Arrowhead. The 13 points were the fewest scored in a regular season game, started by hobbled Patrick Mahomes. It also snaps an NFL record streak of 25-plus points in 25 straight regular season games by the Chiefs, who dropped to 4-1 with the loss. The question here is, worried about the Chiefs after the loss to the Colts? And I'm not at all worried about their offense. I'm worried about their defense. The Indianapolis Colts came in there and controlled the game with their running game, beat up Kansas City. I think the Chiefs have a soft defense. I said it a couple weeks ago. I thought they were going to lose to the Lions. They should have lost to the Lions. I felt like they could lose this game even with all the Colts' injuries. Yeah, I'm worried about the Chiefs as a Super Bowl contender.
I'm not worried about them. There's a level of concern, but the thing is, issues up front, offensive line and injuries. Then if you look at a time of possession, once again, I got to bring this up. Colts came in there and they bloodied them right in the mouth. 37-plus minutes time of possession. And there was a critical exchange of possessions where the Chiefs rarely go three and out. They went three and out. Colts got the ball 14 straight plays, 12 runs.
Yes.
Woo! Now, if you're on Kansas City's defense, I don't give a damn what your talent level is. One, your mind is messed up. We went three and out. Oh, God, we got to come back. Gatorade can't even squirt it out. You back on the field, and then they give you 14 and 12 runs in the world. Even though it ended in a field goal, I think that's when things change mentally for this team. You look at the fact that they were without their top two receivers, just to be real, because Sammy Watkins went out early in this game. No Tyreek Hill. It's just a lot of issues happening at the same time. So I don't think that this team should be worried about their future success. They will get back on track.
Yeah, I don't think they should be worried, because if it's a problem on the offense, I think Andy's going to find a way to fix it. And when you look back at these two teams, they met last year in the playoffs. So they know each other not too well, but they know each other enough. And I guarantee you that the Colts looked at the film and said, okay, we're going to try, you know, this type of scheme. And Andy looked at his scheme and what he did last year, what worked in the playoffs, said, okay, we're going to try it this way. And then it didn't work for Kansas City. It worked for the Colts. So, you know, on top of that, you know, with the offensive struggles, you know, it didn't look the same as it did last year. And Patrick didn't look as good as he's looked
offensive
all season.
Offensive line for the Chiefs to struggle.
But I think the biggest thing they tried to do was keep Patrick Mahomes off the field, run the football, time of possession, keep him on the sideline. That's our best chance of winning. And for them, it was productive because they was able to get Marlon Mack going.
Yeah, and it was good coaching by the Indianapolis coaching staff. So, for sure, they had a good game plan last night, and they executed it perfectly and did what they had to do. That's why they got that win. But going forward, I'm with you with a long-term Super Bowl, because that's what this team is thinking now.
Yeah.
They should have been in the Super Bowl last year.
Right.
If that my boy didn't line up in the backfield, that game was over.
Right.
They can get there again. This team is powerful enough. They seem like they're a spitting image of the team that they were last year. The defense is not that good. It is what it is.
Yeah.
If they can just hold people to 27 points, this offense, when healthy, the offensive line's banged up right now, They're going to get Tyreek back. They'll get all their big ballers back.
Sammy.
They're going to put up points. Sammy. They're going to put up 34 points a game, especially with this kid. And he gets healthy. He was a little hobbled up last night. Mm-hmm. Who knows what would have happened if he didn't get hobbled up last night. I'm talking about Patrick Mahomes. So I'm not worried about this team. I still have them in the AFC Championship game for sure. But eventually that defense is going to have to stop somebody. But it's not going to be to the play. They're going to roll.
Okay, so they're going to be in the AFC Championship game. You know where that's going to be held?
Yeah.
Foxborough.
Absolutely. And that's where it gets scarce.
You're going to – and New England will show up with the defense.
Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs will not. The Chiefs' inside linebackers are collegiate-level inside linebackers. They overpaid for Hitchens. Whoever made that decision needs to be fired. The Chiefs have some unfixed – this is two straight years. Number 53 has destroyed the Kansas City's defense. It's not a tough unit. The Indianapolis Colts came in there banged up all over everywhere and with their offensive line kicked the butt of the Kansas City Chiefs. And at the end of the day, football, no matter what they do to the rules, it's a game of physicality and the Chiefs lose and there's some elite level teams. And it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen again this weekend with the Houston Texans. They're going to come in there and get them again in Arrowhead. The Colts came in with a banged up team and Jacoby Brissett and beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead Stadium, there's a problem.
And it wasn't Jacoby Brissett that beat them. It was the time of possession, Marlon Mack, and that running game. They'll recalibrate. One, they'll get healthy. And two, they'll recalibrate and get a balanced attack because they didn't run the ball effectively. You talk about the New England Patriots. They have their own issues. Let's talk about late-season Patriots. They're not running the ball like they should. So right now, Tom Brady, who last year, if you look at his playoff run, got worse every single round in the playoffs, and that was at a younger age than it's going to be this year, a year older. So they have their own recalibrations to do. I think it's too early to forecast the doom of this team. With a 14th-ranked defense in terms of points allowed, like, that's middle of the pack. That's good enough, and it's better than what they had last year. Yeah. So you give me the same offense or even more firepower and a slightly better defense, this team's in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and when you're talking about the defense, it's funny because Justin Houston, one of the players who I thought was the heart and soul of the Kansas City Chiefs defense over the last couple years, is now with the Indianapolis Colts. So he came into this game fired up with motivation, like, I'm going after Patrick Mahomes. You know he probably knew him, you know, pretty well, but, you know, it was –
But now
let me
funny
ask
we
you
talk
this,
about
Mike.
Defense.
He
knew the plays,
let
he
me
said
ask you
on
this,
couple.
Mike, and Tony, I want you to respond to this too. And here's my problem with Andy Reid. Terrific coach and a hell of an offensive coach. But if I'm leading a team, can I really be sitting down on the bench with my quarterback while my defense is playing? It's like Andy Reid pays no attention to the defensive side of the ball. I think that's inappropriate for a head coach.
Well, I think for him to bring in Steve Spagnuolo, who's a credible defensive coordinator, I mean, you put your trust in him. And Andy knows more than enough about offenses where he can see the flaws on the defense, but it's starting to look like this can't be corrected with this team. They have to clean this up in order to be that championship caliber team and beat New England at the end of the year.
Yeah, and second of all, Andy's probably tired too because he's a big guy. So
yeah.
He wants to sit down and relax.
Tony, no, Tony. Tony, that's the truth. It's untalked about, but trust me, that is the truth.
Oh, well.
Standing for 3 hours.
That's the case, all good. You're spending time with your quarterback.
You know what's crazy?
It's the fact.
Tony, you're funny.
It's just optics, though. You know, they killed Wade Phillips in Buffalo when I was there, and Wade Phillips got out. And you know what one of the headlines was? He doesn't wear a headset. So how prepared can he have his team if he's not even communicating with his other coach staff? We won 11 games. We won 10 games. We won 8 games. And this is with a team that we lost a lot of Hall of Famers, and we were getting poached left and right. The optics. Look, he trusts in his coordinators. I mean, the greatest thing about power is delegation. Like, you got to trust in other people to do their job. So I don't look at that beyond the optics. He's getting his engine ready and revved, and that's the offense of this team.
I'm going to go back to what would Belichick do, what does Sean Payton do? Sean Payton is an offensive guru. Mm-hmm. I don't see him sitting with Drew Brees while the defense is on the field. Sean Payton has his finger and his imprint, and so does Bill Belichick, on everything.
Belichick doesn't count. Payton.
Sean Payton, same deal. Sean McVay. I don't see Sean McVay sitting down, and he's got Wade Phillips.
Yeah.
You got me on that. Well, maybe he's, I was about to come at Sean Payton.
But we don't know. I mean, who knows what they're saying?
Maybe that's just the coaching relationship.
No. I'm saying.
You're talking about from a look, from optical.
I'm talking about from accountability. You have a defense that's been a problem with your franchise for years, and the head coach is disengaged. How can you hold those defensive players as accountable from that head coaching position if you're not fully engaged?
Well, I think don't tell me he's not watching the film. I'm sure he's watching the film the next day saying, all right.
Do you remember Dick Vermeil's years in Kansas City?
Yeah.
Yeah. He had the same issue. Over-the-top offense, laissez-faire attitude with the defense. Sometimes you get what you pay attention to, what you're interested in. The guy from that head coaching position. You can't delegate everything.
You get what you give.
LeVar Arrington and Michael Vick have returned. Let's go back to Dallas, where Dak Prescott has tumbled back to earth after lighting the NFL on fire the first 3 weeks of the season.
Man, tumble.
Cowboys have now dropped 2 straight to the Saints and the Packers, and Dak has looked very average in both losses. The Cowboys quarterback picked a bad time to regress, smack dab in the middle of a highly publicized contract negotiation with Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. It's hard to tell who the Cowboys are negotiating with. The Dak that threw 9 touchdowns in the first 3 weeks, or the Dak that has more interceptions than touchdowns in the last 2 games. All right, was Dak's hot start a hoax?
No, not at all. I think it's lonely where Dak is right now, being promoted, being elevated, playing very well. 106 quarterback rating for Dak Prescott this year.
Yesterday?
Wait a minute.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Speaking of that lonely existence, who wasn't there for him yesterday? The running game. Man, look, growing up, loved peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. God, I used to smoke them at them track meets all day. Arr, arr, arr. Can't do that no more. Big dogs, you know, all that bread. You ever had a peanut butter sandwich, though? Yeah, it ain't
not
that
the
good.
Same.
Nah,
it's
the same. You ever have a jelly sandwich? A little better, but
it's too sweet.
Yep.
The balance isn't there.
Thank you. You need the peanut butter and the jelly. The now you got you out. A sandwich. Yeah. Right now, they giving Dak all the love, and Dak's like, okay, I got you. But then you look back at Zeke, you talking about last night. How about the last 2 weeks? A combined fewer than 100 yards for Ezekiel Elliott. Combined. There is no balance. There's no PB&J right now to this offense. And let's not blow this out of proportion. They lost a road game in the Superdome by 2 points and only gave up 12. Dak is fine. Look, he's not bottom feeding against the worst teams that he got to play against in the first 3 weeks. He's playing against 2 damn good teams the last 2 weeks, but I'm not going to blow it out of proportion. It's not a hoax.
And that's the reason I wouldn't say it was a hoax because, listen, first 3 weeks of the season, it was against lesser competition, but he still did what he needed to do in order to win those football games. This is the National Football League, and you have to come to play each and every week. The last 2 weeks, you know, playoff caliber teams and teams he'll probably see down the road. So, you know, to put it all in perspective, you know, it's all about getting this entire team on the same page. You know, they have to develop a game plan where, okay, we're going to try to run Zeke and we're going to try to get him going. And if it's not, you know, working the way we think it should early, then we won't deviate away from it unless we get down 24-0. Then you got to throw the football and it changes the dynamics of the game. That's what you're going to throw for 400 yards like you did yesterday. But put a concrete plan together for Dak. And I know this is not easy for him to be able to play with everything looming, hanging in the balance of contract and, you know, playoff talk and being one of the best in the league. Mm-hmm. You know, things have to settle down for him, but he needs the help from his coaching staff and the players around him.
Well, he needs the help from his offensive line. I think what that he's really too. Dealing with right now is that injury up front. I said the Smith brothers, the Smith brothers showed up and they was eating. Yeah. And the reality of it was is that if you cannot find that stability up front, which that has been the staple of this Dallas Cowboys team is their up front. I think once they're back and healthy and you see this full offensive line back together again, then you can make more of an accurate assessment on where Dak is. But as it stands right now, I don't look at Ezekiel's situation as being a dire situation. I don't look at Dak's being a bad situation because right now, injury, especially to
not a hoax.
It's not a hoax.
Not a hoax.
It's not a hoax. No, it's not a hoax.
I'm not going to call Dak Juicy Smollett.
But you ain't went that deep? We ain't went that deep yet?
I call him Juicy Smollett.
Right. Oh, man.
I mean, he does have a rope hanging around his neck. I know that. That's a bad
one. Wait a minute.
That's a bad one. That's a bad one. That's a bad one.
Man.
I'm not going to say it was that bad of a hoax, but this isn't it. What he did those first three games is not who Dak is. That's not who Dak is.
Why?
What we're seeing now is who Dak is. If you put him out there against easy competition, then he looks great. You put him out there against tough competition, and he's a guy that needs Zeke Elliott. This is not who we've seen the last 2 weeks is why you don't pay Dak.
Here's where I'll agree with you on that. If you're saying you're going to pay him that type of money because you're now a Super Bowl contending team, I still would like to see a little more. I mean, there's been times where Mike Vick was in bad situations, but you saw him go out there and actually single-handedly prove why he was the best player on the field. I did not see that out of Dak. So if you're saying high standard in terms of, yeah, these are Super Bowl contending teams, I see your point.
Yeah, to your credit and what you just said, that's exactly what I was going to say. I do want to see a little turn up in Dak when needed the most, you know, just like the last 2 weeks. They needed him to step up and make a play. You know, he threw the ball behind Amari Cooper early, and that got him in a tough situation. But moving forward against some of these teams and some strong opponents coming up, you got to step your game up. You know, you got to be the guy who takes over, you know, when nobody else can. So, you know, if I'm the Dallas Cowboys, this is what I do. I go ahead and pay Dak. I give him the money. I don't know if it's going to be $40 million. Could be $30. Something's better than nothing. But ease that pressure and take it off of him and allow him to go out and play.
I think that's a good
point.
So
this is not even a conversation.
I don't think you can go out there and just pay him right now because, again, the number was set so high.
It's still high.
It's still high.
Yeah. $35 million. It is the last two weeks, once you play against
he's earned it.
Playoff teams and then you look completely different than you did against the great teams, how are you going to pay? You can't pay this guy $35, $40 million.
Well, look, in a vacuum, if you want to just give me a sample size of 2 weeks, I give you a sample size of Aaron Rodgers all 5 weeks.
Ooh.
And you don't want to look at Aaron Rodgers this year compared to Dak Prescott, no matter who you're playing against. Ooh. So, that's blasphemous to say, but it's actually factually correct.
That's fair.
So, Dak is top five in completion percentage, yards, touchdowns, quarterback rating. We get it. In a new offense, this is his fifth week in a new offense. People forget that part. He's not fully comfortable in that offense. And where's my engine? Like, Zeke is gone the last couple of weeks, and I'm in a new offense, and y'all expecting greatness? That's unfair to Dak.
If you're going to get paid $35 million a year, if you're going to be anywhere in the Jared Goff range.
Carson Wentz right now.
I know, but Carson Wentz right now is a guy that people are saying he's creeping into the MVP conversation. Carson Wentz is Carson Wentz is a guy where people are like, hey, if everything falls apart, Carson Wentz can carry you. Dak Prescott is showing you that when things fall apart, he can't carry you. You can't pay that guy kind of money.
At least Dak has played in January. Like, look, I'm not dissing Carson Wentz, but it's easy to say what you could do.
But Marcellus,
but he hasn't done it.
Marcellus, you're the king of saying you get paid off what they think you're going to do.
And what you go? Hold on.
Off of what
you get paid off of production and potential. No. It's a balancing act.
I think Dak is going to finish really strong. When I look at their schedule, they got winnable games, and Zeke is going to get going at some point. I think they played against the last two weeks, the two best teams in the NFC.
Mm-hmm.
That's hands down. I think that's why he's looked the way he's looked. But come playoff time, down the road, 5-6 weeks from now, the offense will be different. It won't look the same.
Yeah.
You get to see him against Carson Wentz, and that's going to be interesting because that's a beautiful
That's not how they're going to decide it.
Well, but here's the thing, though. We're trying to decide it off of the last two games against the Saints and the Packers. But if he does well against the Jets, if he does well against the Eagles and the Giants, what are you going to say? okay, he did well against the Eagles.
Mm-hmm. But what are you waiting
for? We're not going to count the Giants. We're not going to count the Jets, right?
Yep.
So at what point in time during the course of the season, okay, we're not counting the Jets. We're not counting the Giants.
Exactly.
We're not counting the Vikings. We maybe the Lions.
It's based off of how much you're going to pay.
So if he beats the Patriots that in that singular Week 12 game, do you pay him then?
No. At this point, in order to get the kind of money we had previously forecast for Dak, he's going to have to win in the postseason. Dak is a guy
again.
You pay. Yeah, again.
So you think this happens after
more.
The season?
At the numbers that he wants, wants something less than $30 million, they could do it now. Something more than $30 million, he's going to have to do it after.
Two weeks ago, you were like, I might be low.
But here's the problem. Here's the problem with that mindset. It still goes back to the original discussion points that we had when we first started talking about it is anything can – just like what happened in this two-week – when we were talking about the first 3 weeks, pay that man $40
million. 40.
Two weeks. He's got to wait till he does something in the playoffs.
Crazy.
We go three more weeks, you're going to be like, I don't know. I'm kind of looking for my peanut butter and jelly.
If he was 5-0, it's going to keep changing. He'll be getting paid right now, today, Monday morning.
Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, joined once again by Michael Vick and LeVar Arrington. Let's return to the NFL, where Christian McCaffrey put on a show yesterday in Carolina. The Panthers running back had 176 yards rushing and three total touchdowns en route to a 34-7 win over the Jaguars. McCaffrey is the fifth player in NFL history to have more than 800 yards from scrimmage in the first five games of a season.
Jeez.
Put McCaffrey's season into perspective, he is easily the most productive running back in the NFL. He leads the league in almost every category except touchdowns, behind only Aaron Jones of the Packers, who had four against the Cowboys yesterday. All right, the question here is Christian McCaffrey the MVP right now? And I think it's a race between he and Russell Wilson. It's just who would you like better? McCaffrey would win it right now if there was a vote because what he's doing is so unique, a white running back, this kind of dominant. But Russell Wilson's on the better team and probably a bit more responsible for the Seahawks being 4-1.
Yeah, I don't think Christian McCaffrey's going to win it. If the conversation was, is he a beast? Is he balling out of control? Is he unstoppable? Yes, yes, yes. Is he going to win the MVP? Hell no. It's a quarterback award. We know what the game is. Only four running backs have won this in the last 20 years. You know why? Because they're looking for the next quarterback. So tie goes to quarterback. You see all that trepidation you have with Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, and then you say Christian McCaffrey, he's going to lose by default because of position. One. Two, I don't think you can win MVP when you're not even the biggest storyline on your own team. Right now, as distant as I am from Carolina, it feels like there's a lot more conversation about Kyle Allen and Cam Newton and his return. Is that going to disrupt the team and winning? More so than how great Christian McCaffrey is, which is almost something that is just stated. Like, it's a known fact now. So because of those two things, it's a rotating trophy that tries to find the next quarterback. And the fact that they have some headlines out there that are, if not trumping, certainly sharing the Christian McCaffrey spotlight, I don't think he wins it.
If you're saying MVP right now, yes, because no man has been in the league has been more important to their team and valuable than Christian McCaffrey. If you look at the wins that they have right now, he's been the biggest reason for that.
Yeah.
He's the X factor. There's no way that you can guard this guy. You can put him anywhere on the field, match him up versus a linebacker, safety. You put him in space. He's hard to guard. This guy has changed the dynamics of the offense for the Carolina Panthers, and he's a big reason why Kyle Allen has had the success. Other than that, you give the MVP to a quarterback. That's usually the way it is. But, you know, there's some guys, the running backs have crept into that position, you know, over the years. And I think Christian McCaffrey, if he continues to play the way he's playing.
There you go.
Consideration. LaDainian Thomas won it. Adrian Peterson won it a couple years.
C-Mac has played all the games this year, and they lost the first two. And then they put a quarterback.
They're using them the first game.
They change quarterbacks and things change.
I think for quarterbacks, it's more about winning. for running backs, it's more about production.
Okay. Yeah.
So I say yes as well. I agree with Mike on this. He's been super productive. He's been the reason why this team has been as competitive as they've been. He's the reason why Cam is wearing the bonnets tied up and lighting a cigar saying that he ain't coming out there halfway because he used to be able to do it like Superman. Ooh. This man is bringing a value back to the position. And bringing attention back to a position that has been slowly devalued and declining as the seasons have passed. So I know we got Kamara and all those guys that can play, and Zeke and all those guys, but McCaffrey is playing on that type of level where he has to be in the conversation. So I would say yes, he is the front runner to get that award right now. But the reality of it is that what's even a bigger win in this entire situation and scenario is that you have a white running back making the running back's position relevant in an MVP race.
Well, why? A black golfer brought golf back.
Hey, man.
Right. It's
the reality.
Not the same impact, is it? Thank you. That's
No, not for us, Marcellus.
Hold on. Y'all preaching to the choir. I love C-Mac from college. Used to cover the guy, Pac-12 championships and all that. That said,
you know, people say that before they hate on somebody.
I'm about to hate on him.
To the whispers, but
I'm saying, okay, let's put something on this right now. Will he win this award? I'm not saying
if he continues at this pace. He continues at this pace, and just say if the Carolina Panthers make it to the divisional round of the playoffs.
He has to share the success with his quarterback. Y'all forget.
No, he doesn't.
His quarterback's been pedestrian, man. I mean, he's been, I don't want to diss Kyle Allen, but he's just been mistake free.
Oh, I give you all that, but the story. Storyline in Carolina is not that. The storyline is we can't win without Kyle Allen. That's what it's been the last 9 years.
We're sitting on Speak for Yourself right now talking about is he the MVP runner right now? Christian McCaffrey, not
amazing.
Allen.
Marcellus. Yes, sir. Marcellus.
News. He's making news.
Like, Tiger Woods, when he won the Masters, that made me cry. And huge Tiger Woods.
That's
it didn't make white guys cry. Like it did us.
Well, that's not analogous. So,
No. But I'm saying, if you don't think there's some white football fans out there, kids, like looking at Christian McCaffrey like, damn.
I got hope.
It's good for the sport.
I got hope. It's great for the sport.
All that's great, but the black golfer before Tiger Woods, Calvin Peet, other than that, we didn't see it. We've seen white running backs before. Can we not
add it? It has been since 1962 since a white guy.
Craig James did something to my soul.
But none of them dudes have run like Christian McCaffrey.
Running back.
Okay.
None of them have run like McCaffrey.
LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yes, he does.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm talking about in a better version, you know, as far as catching out of the backfield.
I'm going to give you who it reminds you. It's Marshall Faulk.
It's Marshall Faulk.
And Marshall Faulk was the MVP.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he's not lead. I don't think Carolina's a Super Bowl team.
Yes.
It was a quarterback-driven league then.
Kurt Warner.
It was a quarterback.
Quarterback-driven with the rules now and the protections and the 5,000 yards.
It was still a quarterback-driven league.
No, that
come on,
team.
Come on.
It'll always be a quarterback.
Come on,
Marcellus,
now.
It's story. This guy has an incredible story.
Yeah.
That the media may be slow to.
Drew Brees had a great story too. He didn't get the MVP last year.
But not like this, man. This is unique. This dude looks like Marshall Faulk has some shake like Barry Sanders.
Come on now.
I mean, I've been
watching it. We haven't seen this before.
Look at that strap.
It's been since 1962, since Jim Taylor, a white dude, legged the NFL in rushing.
Respect. And Patrick Mahomes, if Patrick Mahomes doesn't throw an interception this year, which it looks like he may not, y'all think they're going to give him the award over Patrick Mahomes if it's a tie? I'm just saying there's going to be three. Russell Wilson is playing better than he's ever played. All I'm saying is there are going to be two quarterbacks right next to him.
I don't disagree with what you're saying.
That's all I'm saying.
But in the conversation of most valuable player in the league and to your team, Christian McCaffrey has to be in that conversation.
Put up
and
astronomical
strongly,
numbers.
If his numbers keep going strongly,
if astronomical, he has a chance to win the MVP.
If he leads the league in rushing, I think it's a wrap.
I'm looking at all the league leaders in the last few years.
Well, I get it.
Don't forget about his receiving yards as well.
Yeah.
We're talking about total yards from scratch.
I'm about to win a lot of Casa.
Before we go, I'd like to address the Kansas basketball Snoop Dogg controversy. In case you missed it, the Jayhawk basketball program hired the old school gangster rapper to serve as the closing entertainment for its late night in the fall college basketball kickoff celebration. Snoop gave his standard X-rated performance. He strutted around the court, rapping the N-word, the B-word, and a few MFs for good measure. He fired fake $100 bills at the Kansas players, scantily clad women work stripper poles, a blunt-smoking Jayhawk mascot served to Snoop's hype man. Oh, the kids loved it. Rock Chalk Jayhawk F.U. Some people saw it as a giant F.U. to the NCAA, which has the KU basketball program and its rules violations crosshairs. But it wasn't an F.U. to anyone. It was shoe business as usual. Basketball at every level, from AAU to high school to college to the NBA, is controlled by shoe companies.
Uh-oh.
The shoe companies are obsessed with gangster rappers and the hip-hop culture. Nike took control of the shoe market in the late 1980s and the early 1990s by previewing its Air Jordans to inner-city drug dealers and rappers. The shoe companies installed Snoop, Drake, and Jay-Z as the tastemakers of basketball, and they're in the process of doing the same to football. Both Nike and Adidas are bigger businesses than the NFL and the NBA. Mm. It's not close. Adidas generates $25.9 billion in revenue. The NBA generates $8 billion. Mm. My point is, American basketball exists to sell shoes. And that's why a traditional family event like Late Night at the Fog has turned into strip club night in the fog. College basketball is following the lead of its masters. Snoop is a tastemaker and influencer for Adidas. Kansas is an Adidas school. Shoe companies believe in the degeneracy of gangster rap culture far more than they believe in the traditional values of sports culture. Gangster culture created the Nike slash Air Jordan dynasty. Kansas Athletics Director Jeff Long issued an apology for Snoop's explicit performance. Kansas basketball coach Bill Self acknowledged his embarrassment, but added that KU has been hiring rappers to perform at late night for the past several years. If you've been wondering what has changed the culture of sports, why sports leagues and sports stars have rapidly embraced values inconsistent with sports culture, it starts at the ground floor. It's in the shoes. More Speak for Yourself after this. LeVar Arrington has returned. Let's go to London, where the Bears linebacker Khalil Mack was hoping to exact his revenge on the Raiders for trading him to Chicago last season. But instead, the silver and black held Mack in check, not allowing a sack to the Pro Bowler. Rookie running back Josh Jacobs, who was drafted with a pick the Raiders got in return for Mack, went off for 123 yards and two touchdowns. Are the Raiders for real? I vote yes.
Mm-hmm.
3-2. I think they're a threat. I watched them play the Chiefs. That was a very weird game. The Chiefs won 28-10, but it was not a blowout. Raiders scored 10 points in the first quarter. Chiefs scored 28 in the second quarter. Nothing happened in the second half. John Gruden, and he may get the last laugh.
Man, he may get the last laugh. First, just respect to John Gruden for having your team respond to adversity this entire offseason, what was going on, and even throughout the season.
Perfect.
Yeah, perfect and everything. Like, this team shows up and the wins. Colts, which we just saw last night, that's a damn good team. They just beat the Chiefs. Bears and the Broncos, who just beat the Chargers. So now you can't even sleep on them. So quality wins as well, even on the road. This was a team that I think a lot of teams were looking at and circling, saying that should be a win. We can beat them if we show up. Now, even if you show up, you're gonna know you've been in a fight with the Raiders. So, yeah, I think they're a real team.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I'll complete the trifecta. I mean, listen, they're 3-2 right now. They were 4-12 last year. They're already one game off from where they were total wins last year. Then you look at where they're at in terms of in their division. They're only one game out of first place. So you got to be looking at them, and if you're a Raiders fan, you got to be feeling positive and excited about this group. I guess the example or the illustration of, you know, do you buy into John Gruden? I know we had that conversation. Do you buy into Gruden? Do you buy into him? And that corniness that he brings to the table, like, dude, do we have a disco? I feel like dancing. I've never been so happy in my life, right? To the outside world, they may look at it and be like, man, it's disingenuous, feel a certain type of way about it. But guys really buy into John Gruden, and I think we're seeing the impact and effects of that.
I hate to say this in some ways, but I think the adversity, the AB situation, clearly helped the Raiders.
Hmm.
Galvanized them as a team, certainly has motivated John Gruden, and I think that has played a role. The reason why I hate to say it is because I know at least one person in the media, Lewis Riddick, spent the offseason saying that the Raiders are different and this is going to be a good team. He spent the entire offseason.
He played for the Raiders. But, he's a little biased.
But he was on. And so maybe this was just a natural byproduct of what the direction they've been headed. But I tend to think this AB situation actually is turned into a blessing for them in terms of focus and putting a chip on everybody's shoulder. John Gruden, I think, has played those cards with his team emotionally. No one thinks anything of you without AB. And then you toss in Burfict. Hats off to John Gruden.
Yeah, they turned a me against the world into a we against the world in terms of a team. And look, when you get discounted, when you get, you know, discarded, and all of a sudden you say, wait, even one of our own doesn't want us? That does bring you together in terms of camaraderie. But that said, you still got to have some players. And they got a player in Josh Jacobs, top five in rushing yards and touchdowns right now. I wouldn't go as far as surprised because if you really watched him at Alabama, you're like, he's special, but he had a shared experience in that running game. He's helping his team with that beefy offensive line that they have, Richie Incognito setting the tone. They got some bullies in the front, and then they got a guy that can work it in the back in terms of a workhorse. It's a formula for success.
And they have a defense that can play. And the reality of it is, as you mentioned, Richie Incognito, he made it very blunt. He made it very clear. They came out and they punched him in the mouth, and they did not like getting hit in the mouth the way that they did. If they can maintain their health and this level of expectation and accomplishment, they're going to be a dangerous team. I don't give them Super Bowl yet. I think they're for real, but I don't give them Super Bowl contender. But they certainly can give some teams the rest
the
of
the
Bears
way. The Bears did a couple of really stupid things at the end. Rushing the punter and getting that penalty was stupid, but hats off to John Gruden, the Oakland Raiders. All right, Darnell, did anyone win Terry's $250,000 this weekend in the Super Six?
So close, Whitlock. One fan from California came within one Ravens touchdown to jackpot, but two lucky fans ultimately walked away with some cash in their pockets. So make sure you download the Fox Sports Super Six app and play for free for a chance to win next Sunday.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for Dak Prescott.
You know.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, who's your big dummy of the day?
You.
Yes.
I done told you before, the man's name is Christian McCaffrey. He's a running back in the NFL. Not a white running back.
Get him.
He's just a McCaffrey, and he's a bad boy.
He's nice.
All right, let's get to our approval ratings. Oh, not to our approval ratings.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's get to our discussion.
As you shook, huh?
You got him. After starting the season looking like the second coming of Troy Aikman, Dak has come back to earth with two straight losses. Marcellus, is Dak folding under the contract pressure?
Not at all. If he's folding under anything, it's just tougher competition the last couple of weeks, obviously. But Dak Prescott has been playing great football. You got to keep it in the sample size of five games, not split it 3-2. Dak will respond when Ezekiel Elliott responds in the last 2 weeks. Fewer than 100 combined yards. That's not going to get it. So Dak needs his running mate. He needs Zeke.
I think he needs the Jets. That's who he has this weekend. Yeah, that's who he has this weekend.
Right.
Dak, eats a big meal against sorry teams and, goes on a diet against the great teams.
That's the NFL experience. That's how we roll. Pad the stats.
I don't know. I think the pressure's getting to him. But Uncle Jimmy, you've not been the biggest Dak fan. Is he folding under the pressure?
In the words of G Money, most definitely. Hey, man, I done told y'all before.
Yeah.
Pressure will make a monkey eat fire and sometimes make him sway like it. That's what we witnessing right now with Dak Prescott. Look here, man. Y'all look at the Cowboys. Who they done beat? They beat the Giants, the Redskins, and that other team down in Miami. What's their name?
Dolphins.
The Hurricanes.
Yeah.
They beat them.
The Dolphins.
Look, man, Uncle Jimmy been following the NFL for 68 years. I done seen quarterbacks come and quarterbacks go.
Yes, you have.
And as far as I'm concerned, Dakari Fitzgerald Prescott is exactly who I thought he was. A fake. A fraud. Oh, he's a daggum veggie burger. Means he serves no purpose in life.
I like veggie burgers.
Let me ask you a question, Darkless.
I'm with you.
Did you or did you not say that Dak Prescott should get $1 more than who? What's his name? Carson Wentz?
Yeah, redhead.
Did you say that?
I did say that.
Let me tell you something, man. I wouldn't pay Dak Prescott a dollar more than Danny White. And Danny White's 68 years old. At least Danny White could punt. You know, Danny White had to feel the shoes of Roger Staubach.
Yeah.
And Roger Staubach had big feet, right? And the only thing Dak had to do was place Tony Romo. And Tony Romo wore a size 7. That shouldn't be that hard to do.
How you know that?
Hey, man, you know what they say about a man with small feet.
Oh, boy, what?
He got to shop for his shoes in the little kid department.
Look at his feet. I hate his feet. Those are not his feet.
Dak can't feel a size 7. How in the hell you going to lead a locker room full of grown men and you got little tiny feet? The boy got baby feet trying to lead grown men. You out of your damn mind if he going to take them little tiny feet and lead some grown men. Hey, man, Dak was this close to getting $40 million in a contract.
Yeah.
Now the best he gonna get is 40 acres and some baby Jordans. That boy got baby feet and he ain't taking the Cowboys nowhere.
Oh, man. Give
him
2 weeks.
Damn, that's pretty cold, man.
Give him 2 more weeks.
Little tiny Photoshop feet.
Did you do that Photoshop yourself?
No, that was taken yesterday on the game. Y'all just ain't never looked at him. That's why he was stumbling.
Oh, man. He got them Snoops on. That's the Adidas.
Wow. Little tiny feet.
All right, let me get to
like
my
the polar
approval.
Bear.
Let me get to my approval ready for. Oh, man. Dak Prescott has been all over the board.
Yes, he
And he has. Goes down big time on my approval rating here.
Oh, yeah.
He was an 81, almost GOAT status when we did him, I think, 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago.
And hey, whatever.
Now he's all the way down to a 59 role player.
Yep.
10 in job performance, 10 in all time greatness, 22 character. I drop him in authenticity as well.
Yeah, I had to drop him as well, just because of the team success and the quarterback.
How you got him at a 20 job performance?
Because he's still out there getting it. It's Zeke the one that's disappeared in the last 2 weeks, and that's all you want to focus on the last 2 weeks, so I'm going to focus on the last 2 weeks. Authenticity had to drop, though. He's lying. He want to call Zeke out. All that Cabo is catching up, but he ain't.
All right, thank you. Internet has him at a scout team.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.